This is Calliope Writing Coach, the podcast about writing and publishing success from every angle. I'm Angie Fenimore, international best-selling author and writing coach.
And I'm Michael Sheen, author, platform designer, and marketing master. Episode 40, Music, Marketing, and Manuscripts. Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Calliope Writing Coach podcast. And always, 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 we have Michael and Angie in the house.
Well, sometimes I'm only halfway here, but today I am fully present.
And today our special guest is Mr. Garrison Snell. Welcome, Garrison.
Thank you, guys. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, we're so excited you're here.
And we actually have him in studio, so this is going to be fun. Garrison Snell may only be 24, but the Gyrosity Project's founder already is a music industry veteran. The Arkansas native started his first business to book his bands into local clubs while he was still in high school. Snell and another freshman began a booking and tour coordination service for their classmates, putting together a 40-date, six-state fair and festival tour in 14 months. Halfway through this tour, Garrison was hired to run digital marketing for Little Willie Records, a startup record label owned by Brooks & Dunn's Ronnie Dunn. After a year and a half, he was hired as the project development coordinator at ThinkSwell, a digital marketing agency owned by renowned artist management company Fitzgerald Hartley. All this occurred while he was still in college. Snell left that job to launch Gyrosity Projects shortly after he graduated in 2015, where he created the digital development firm to help clients achieve business goals through digital marketing services and projects. Gyrosity services clients in industries ranging from music to healthcare, and also manages Nashville pop artist Mitchell Rose. Gyrosity now employs 16 people, all of them under the age of 30, and has been profitable every month since its inception. The company recently launched its first web app, Crosshair Music, which provides independent musicians with affordable access to digital influencers, including playlist curators, Musically accounts, and music supervisors.
It's quite the checkered past.
Wow. No kidding. And I know all of you are asking out there in podcast land, what does this have to do with me?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I love to do. Did I cut you off?
You did, and I'm so sorry because I had nothing to say.
Oh.
Go ahead.
So one of the things that I love to do is I love to take a look at other industries and what they're doing and then apply that and bring you into our world. And so, you know, when we met Garrison, where did we met in?
Florida, right? Fort Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale. Fort Lauderdale. So at an event. Yeah. So awesome to have you out here and just to pick your brain. This is cool.
Yeah. I'm really excited.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about marketing and how you...
Tell us what you do. Tell us what you do. And then we'll talk about how it applies to you. Yeah. And those of you who are thinking, oh, this doesn't apply, I'm not a musician, you want to stay tuned because this completely applies. Michael and I are blown away by Garrison and like the magic they create. Okay.
Oh, it's flattering.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. We started out marketing a lot of independent musicians and most of them have this problem, like, how do I take a little bit of money and get attention, get a following, and then turn that into cash flow, turn that into revenue? And usually it's based around a product that they have yet to create, you know? Mm-hmm. And between the independent artist clients that we've worked with and then other public figures that came as a result of that, there's this definitive pattern between anybody that is a creative and is premeditating a product but knows they have to build a following prior to launching that product and knows that the likelihood that that product is going to be successful without a pre-built following is fairly, very low. So our company does that. We build those followings from ground zero to legendary artists and public figures that have, you know, 15 plus Grammys and don't know where else to go.
We're
sitting
great.
At 45 clients now, and we celebrated our third birthday 2 weeks ago.
Oh, well, so, you're younger than us.
Yeah, we're
in every possible way.
In every possible
way. It has grown quick.
I have like 3 children older than you, I think. Something like that.
Yeah. It's all good. I try to play my age up a little bit. I, you know,
You definitely do not act like I acted when I was 24. I can tell you that. So
I don't act like any other 54-year-old I know.
No, definitely not.
I'm
definitely
more
not.
Like 24.
Yeah. It's just a number, man.
The kids all complain that they're older than me.
So, yeah.
Okay, I digress.
I met you, Garrett, and I met you, Garrison, and immediately saw the application there. Because as an author, you know, you're told to build your platform prior to having a book.
And this isn't just like self-pub authors. This is everybody.
Absolutely.
Everybody has to be interested because there's just so much noise out there. And, you know, oversaturation.
I immediately saw the tie to what you do and what we're trying to create with, you know, with an author platform and with branding and influencer marketing and everything. And so, yeah, it's exciting. I think that, you know, we will have a long and productive future together.
That's what I'm hoping. You know, we've worked on a couple artist or author projects, and it's the exact same thing. It's crazy. You know, the interesting thing is authors and other public figures don't have to hide their personality and themselves behind audio and behind chord changes in music. They present themselves as they are. Very, very explicitly in their content.
Very
for artists,
good.
There's another little filter there that the general public has to kind of get through in order to figure out who exactly they are and why this person is unique and interesting. It's actually easier for authors.
That's mm-hmm. so great. Mm-hmm. So tell us some of the nuts and bolts.
Yeah, there's quite a bit. So the first thing is I'm gonna start with the basics around digital marketing and why it's important. Let me go there first.
Okay.
So very, very first thing, prior to, let's say, 12 years ago, 10, 12 years ago, before social media was around, there were all of these gatekeepers that existed. And to have access to any of the audiences you wanted access to, you had to go through these gatekeepers. And now, in the day and age we're in, it's programmatic. Like, you can access an audience with nothing more than $5 a day on digital advertising and a couple emails and a really nice collaboration opportunity. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so easy to build a platform if you have a basic, solid quality understanding of what is different about you and who your audience is.
That's so great.
It's like the tools and the channels are ubiquitous, and they're ideally, you have a background in doing them because they change all the time and, you know, they're very complicated. But, if you don't have this kind of fundamental marketing platform, if you don't know who you are, what your value proposition is, and who in the world needs you and what you have to say, then it doesn't matter what channels you have available. So the first steps are figure that out.
That's exactly what Michael does.
Is
design that part of it.
Yeah.
You know, so have you design it so it's authentic to you?
Yeah. The thing that I teach is, you know, a lot of times when you're writing your book, you're told that you got to develop a one-liner for your book so that you know exactly very concisely what your book is about.
So that you can pitch this.
Yeah.
Like, if you get a moment with somebody, I mean, you know, every literary agent, every publisher, every filmmaker, every studio, they want that one-liner. They want to hear the whole thing in one sentence, right?
So I take that, and then what I have my clients do is develop a one-liner for their life. And what they are out there for, like, what is the meaning behind what they're doing? And
like, what are you connected to, too? What are you committed to causing?
Absolutely.
You know?
And it makes such a difference when you are putting together then that platform building or that marketing plan. Because now when you're reaching out to an influencer, you can actually say, hey, I'm all about XYZ, no more homeless pets, right? Or ending suicide. And all of that speaks to who you're trying to connect with.
Yeah.
And if their audience is interested in what your message is, then all of a sudden you've got a connection.
Absolutely. And it's funny. I don't know if this is the same in y'all's world, but in the music world, we have artists that come to us all the time saying, look at the product I've created. I spent $45,000 creating this EP or this bit of audio, and it should be special because of the audio or the hard work that I put into this creation. Mm-hmm. And I go, all right, so first off, where's the budget left over for getting this in front of anybody? But secondly, what about this thing embodies something that is not replicable or does not already exist? Mm-hmm. Every industry is being affected by this concept called Moore's Law, which is that the computation power of a microchip is going to double every year. from now on into the future. And it's, Moore's Law was coined in the 80s, I believe. But the point is that we're reaching this kind of exponential growth period where technology is going to make everything that was hard easy. Hmm. And it's, I mean, the only thing that's going to be different is you individually. Like, you're the only thing not replicable. So I have my clients, and I'm sure you guys do as well, go through a process of pulling apart their personal experiences, pulling apart the things that they love, the things that are natural to them, and putting them into buckets and looking at each one individually as a marketing opportunity and not mixing it up in yourself. A good example is a gospel artist client of ours. Her name is Cece Winans. You know Cece?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, she's my girl. Like, she's my favorite. Cece has a very interesting life and past, but one of the biggest things about her is that she's founded a church in Nashville that specifically has a couple causes attached to it, a couple charity causes attached to it. And when she launched her album last year that won 2 Grammys and a Dove, we focused explicitly on the cause-based marketing about her as a person and used digital advertising, influencers, and social media to take that to an audience that knew of her but didn't really know what she stood for. And as a result, she ended up winning 2 Grammys and a Dove.
Like, well, see, here's the thing. Okay, you have all this dialed in, the how-to, and I have chills, which is what you must create with the audience.
Absolutely.
Is chill factor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You've got to have that with, you know, in book writing, you've got to have it with the manuscript, but you've got to also produce that. People have to have this connection to you.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, but that's brilliant. Yeah,
there's a format for it, you know. I'm sure you guys have one you teach as well. Like, we have a formula, a format for going through and saying, pull apart the things that matter to you and don't criticize them, pass no judgment on them. Just if your heart resonates with something, even a little bit, get it on a piece of paper, and we will look at that in a vacuum as an opportunity, I guess, as currency for engaging with a group of people out there that don't yet know you.
That's so great.
And the way by which you do that is digital advertising, social media, influencers, email marketing, short video, graphic design. I mean, all of these tools that are in the tool belt.
So tell us how you interlace all these things to create, you know, Cece Winans winning Grammys.
Yeah.
And,
I'm going to give you some steps you can go through here. So the first thing that we normally have our clients do is go through that process. And it doesn't take very long. It takes maybe a day or two, you know, spending a few hours with us, piecing out, just give me these pieces of you. And then I take them, or my team takes them, and we look at them and go, okay, here's this element that our client can actively talk about. It gives them energy. They're excited about it. Let's pull out that and see where it relates in pop culture or in some sort of subculture that our client doesn't yet have access to. Where is new ground to gain? So a good example is Cece's obviously African-American. She's incredible. There's a whole subculture in the African American community that doesn't know about pre-2010 gospel music and like what it stood for. Because gospel music's changed a lot since 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the early 2000s, when she was in the 90s, when she was at her peak, there are a lot of young African American folks that are familiar with the causes that she loves, but do not understand like what gospel music stood for when she started. And so we built a bunch of content that took Cece and what she cares about and went to that community. And it was basically short form video around causes. And, there was one of the causes that her church supports is children overseas that are basically refugee children. And some of the video we created was her music and her mission focused on what she as a person would do if she had the ability to help all the refugee children on the planet. And really nothing to do with the song she was promoting. We just put it in the background and then mentioned it later on in the video. Had literally nothing to do with the song. And we didn't even advertise it from her Facebook page. We advertised it from a bunch of third-party pages that we own. One was called Living Healthy, and another one was called Nash Gossip. And so some third-party pages that we own that are basically just saying, here is this person who's doing an incredible thing. It builds a really authentic bridge. Do you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah. No. We speak the same language.
Absolutely.
Okay, but you have some things dialed in here. Yeah. You know,
I spent a long time building a process for
it. It's one thing to understand this, right? Yeah. And it's another thing to actually, like, serve it up on a platter.
Totally.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know.
No, you've definitely got the implementation of a whole bunch of conceptual things down.
Thank you. I and the job that you mentioned, Thinkswell. I when I was working with Ronnie, and then Thinkswell, their clients are Brad Paisley, Randy Houser, Vince Gill, Chris Young, a bunch of kind of legacy country artists. Mm-hmm. I was under the gun to figure out how to come up with really incredible ideas and marketing ideas quickly. And so I built a format for myself that took a bunch of conceptual items and put them in a box, put them in a structure, mm-hmm. and gives me a format I can run through to come up with things that are unique ways to look at a bottle of lotion or look at a coffee label or look at a song or an artist.
And well, I just got to say you're a genius.
No, thanks. No,
I mean, got like seriously. Jobs,
so, you know, go put yourself in a really hard job for a little while. They did me a massive service, though, by trusting me with some of the brands they did and then giving me the opportunity to develop that process. So, you know, it's right now it's a bunch of formulas we go through. And then the final step is creating the content and deploying it through usually digital advertising, which is the easiest, most normal, relevant, consistent, just everyday way to deliver content to someone. Because most people don't like advertisements. But only as we gather more data on what people like are those ads going to become more and more relevant and they're more and more useful. Mm-hmm. So I may show you an ad for something that you absolutely love and show it to you consistently, and you're going to thank me for that ad being shown, as opposed to being like, I want to get rid of this because it is not relevant to me. Mm-hmm. Usually the reason people want to get rid of it is because it's irrelevant. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, with cookie data and IP data and just how large a lot of this advertising data is getting, we're able to make advertisements super relevant and therefore mm-hmm. valuable. So you can jump on Facebook and for a couple bucks a day, just drop your content on your target audience's head for as long as you want. And it's not incredibly difficult.
Yeah. I'm blown away by how, when I play solitaire on my phone, no kidding. Like, it's like they know me, you know, yep. It's just weird
in between.
Yeah.
Game. Yeah.
The goal is that it's supposed to be a good service. For
it
the users,
is,
you know,
I like this. Yeah. Yeah.
Some people have an issue with the fact that the data is being collected, but the fact is it's being created, you know, like we're creating it every time we log onto our laptops or get on a local area network or something. We create that impression. And I, for one, I'm glad that the folks who provide me the ability to get on the internet are collecting what I do and saying, we're going to tailor your experience to just what you care about.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That for me is it's public service, I guess.
Totally. It is in one sense. Yeah. And in another sense, it's a little bit unnerving.
Absolutely unnerving.
I think that's where people get hung up, is that it can be unnerving that, like, they know, I don't know, I get this ad, my feet are bothering me, okay, at 2 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. and I get an ad about what to do for my feet that are bothering me. That's just kind
and
of,
it's like, where it's did kind that of strange. Come from?
There is a line that should be drawn where if you do not create that footprint knowing that it's going to be used, then it shouldn't be tracked.
Yeah, you know? And I know I'm doing that. I'm like, yeah, I'm clicking, like, on that.
They shouldn't have access to, you know, the text messages I send to my friends.
No,
but
right,
they obviously
right.
do at points where they look at the content of your text messages and determine, do you mention brands often or do you mention, it's called natural language processing.
Oh, that's kind of freaky.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's... Mm-hmm.
Anyways, so Garrison, you touched on something really quickly, but I want to go back to it. Mm. Tell me your philosophy about failure.
Oh my goodness. That's a great question. So I have gotten my butt kicked since I got to Nashville 4 distinct times that I can think of, 4 massive failures. And I have this weird love-hate relationship with failure. I have this weird, like, it has to happen in order for me to be anything at all, for me to be any better. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because it's just super stereotypical, but once you hit the bottom, like, there is literally nowhere else to go.
I love rock bottom.
No, it's amazing. Yeah. Like, it's so therapeutic to be at rock bottom. The problem is when you have a almost masochistic relationship with rock bottom, you keep going back to it. Mm-hmm. The question for me these days has not been, can I rise above failure? It's how do I go from good to great? Mm-hmm. You know, and like, once I'm flying and I'm soaring and something's happening, how do I then make that great in a legacy? You know, I when I hit rock bottom, man, like, it's get this big old smile on my face and I'm like, let's get it. Let's get it. So I almost seek it out. A lot of the folks on my team don't appreciate it because I put them in challenging situations. I never judge them. I never assess their value based on whether they fail or not in what I put them in. I just assess it based on how tenacious are they in getting through the failure. I've gotten my best lessons out of that. And I've also gotten my best, I think my best stories.
I would say
the Ronnie project, which you mentioned earlier, was one of my bigger failures. It was 2 years spent with a guy. I was 19, had never done digital marketing really before. He hired me as his director of digital marketing to lead his second solo album release. And there was some issues with like budgeting and how much money we were going to have to spend on advertisements, blah, blah, blah. But I was so stubborn in that gig and thought I knew what I was doing and thought that was the way to be successful instead of just humbling myself and figuring it out. Mm-hmm. And ended up, we sold a bunch of records, but we did not sell enough for it to make sense for him to continue the business. And he went out and signed another record deal with a company called Nash Icon, which is a subsidiary of Big Machine in Nashville. And him and I remain friends to this day. But, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it that Ronnie giving me the opportunity, me performing well, but not performing as well as I could if I had got out of my own way. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, like we would have been so much more successful. But in doing that, I learned one of my biggest flaws and I learned how to compensate for it. And it's created so much momentum for me regardless.
I just don't even believe that there is success without hitting bottom and then coming up. And I mean, something I always say is, that's where shit happens. And you're going to have to beep that out. But it is. Rock bottom is where shit happens. But you also don't want a butt ski down there.
No, either. I think people have this, especially today with the kind of influx of the tech culture, they have this love of like, well, fail fast and fail hard and fail often. Mm-hmm. I'm all about it. My problem is that we strive for success, though. And if you don't suck the lessons out of failure,
exactly,
there's no foundation on which to build success.
Exactly. You
know, all the lessons of failure are ultimately the platform that holds up your successful enterprise or whatever it is. And I would imagine my dad's an artist and a bunch of my friends are artists. They find some of their best inspirations in their darkest
moments. Absolutely. Well, from book writing, I will tell you, it's like, whenever we have people that are participating in any of our programs and they're like bottomed out, I'm like, awesome.
Yeah.
Tap into that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And you know, for everybody listening out there, I hope that you can take this. This is actually called a growth mindset. Hmm. And if you can take a growth mindset approach to everything that you're doing, then there is no such thing as failure. It's all just a learning experience.
Exactly.
And what do you learn from that? How do you take that
absolutely
and go to the next level, right?
Yeah. I will say one of the things I learned through some consistent failures is that there's this temptation to want to be successful before you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it taught me very quickly that the more you do that, the more you fake it, that it's just you'll end up farther behind than where you were if you
totally
buckle down, shut your mouth and done the work.
Mm-hmm.
And so my motto these days has been real is rare. You know, my competitive edge is 100% authentic.
You know, and that is something real that had us like totally hanging out in Florida. It was just like meeting of the minds and hearts, you know? And I agree with you. It is rare, but it's like, that's what people want.
Yeah.
People, they recognize authenticity and resonates with them. That's what people want.
That's the secret ingredient for independent artists. And I would stretch to imagine that would not be much of a stretch to imagine that's the secret ingredient for authors as well.
Totally. Oh, totally.
Vulnerability and authenticity.
Yeah,
for sure. So. Well, I'm going to totally take advantage of this time that we have face to face. I am writing a book called The Manly Manual.
Okay.
And this is about becoming a balanced man in an unbalanced world.
Awesome.
Talk to me. Talk to me about my marketing plan, where I should be focusing, and what I should be looking to go forward with this.
Sure. So tell me about the experience that created that idea. Like, where did you feel that?
So it came in meeting Angie, actually.
Okay.
And yeah, I'll tell you, the working title of this book before it became The Manly Manual was something rock bottom. What was it?
Oh, Ramblings.
Ramblings from Rock Bottom.
Ramblings from Rock Bottom.
Isn't that
actually
cool?
Yeah.
Yeah. Michael spent some time in the pokey. What else?
I've kind of been through the ringer, a couple divorces and you know, in meeting Angie, just fell head over heels for her. And she had actually had a vision a dream several years earlier in which she was shown the only man for her. And he was balanced in five areas.
And he was healthy.
Yeah, so he was healthy.
And I saw us on an airplane, ironically on an airplane, and all I got was the great smile and the height. Okay.
Fascinating.
But I was basically told five things: physically, emotionally, spiritually, sexually, and financially healthy.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking for.
These are the themes.
And it was like, I was told you're dating, like, there are a million men out there that you're a match for if you could find one of them. And I was told emphatically, no, there's one. Cool. And here's what he looks like.
Okay. And so is the manual, it's a guide or a process.
It really is the process that I used, because when she told me this, I was like, that ain't me. Mm. And I was crushed. Okay. And I thought, well, okay, but why couldn't it be?
Why couldn't it be?
And I went about the process of becoming healthy in each of those five areas.
I'm going to have to get me one of these. So it's great.
Yeah. Yep. So what started out as a play for a hot chick turned into pretty good life lessons.
I love it. So the basis, the root of this marketing strategy is going to be around the problem that it solves for other men. Mm. And so we're going to pull apart those five themes, and we're going to find anecdotes from your life and her life that are going to exemplify those themes. Mm-hmm. And we're going to build a ton of video around it. And we're going to build a ton of resources around that. And the way we're going to build these resources is they're probably going to be everything from short guides or assessments all the way up to richer versions in which a man who feels that this is an issue or a woman who pegs that as an issue can tap into your experience and give her husband a step-by-step or give her fiance or boyfriend a step-by-step. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to use those videos to drive traffic into a funnel, essentially, and they will convert on probably pre-book sales in a funnel that's based on getting access to this plus some sort of resource that's exclusive prior to the book being released. And then once the book is released, they'll obviously get access to it. The goal will be to collect email addresses prior, collect a bunch of email addresses, and then use those to launch the book from that point. The goal would be to start with about 10,000 email addresses.
All right.
And our kind of cost per conversion on email addresses is about, it's between 10 and 35 cents, I guess, depending on what you're spending. You know, we were running one the other day where an artist was needing email addresses for a product launch campaign, and they were popping off at 25 cents a sign up prior to the release of this song. And so, the goal is to build a ton of content that basically reflects the problem back at the target audience and then says, here's how it gets solved. And it's not just solved by buying this book, but it's solved by engaging with us in all of these different ways. And by when you engage with us, you get the book.
That's great.
And then we're going to go to other places where people have said, I have used the same thing or it's the same concepts and have ended up in a great place. We're going to hijack that content. Using some software and a couple other formats and use that content as social proof that it works. Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
And it's probably a 6-month campaign, probably, maybe a little less. And the goal would be to congregate email addresses that are ready and waiting and excited about the problem that's going to be solved once they get the entire thing.
So great.
So
now everybody, I know right now they're going, how can I work with Garrison? I know that's what they're thinking. I can see. I can see into the future because they're hearing this after we recorded it, but I can hear them asking.
Well, I definitely wanted to just pick your brain for a minute, but I hope that everybody out there sees the value of just, I didn't even prepare you for that. And I mean, the brilliance that comes off.
And you guys aren't even getting the visual. It's like he's visually brilliant too. Oh, you can see it. You can see that brain working.
So, how can we get in touch with you?
It's a good question. So let's do this. If you guys will go to my company's website, I'm going to spell it out for you. There's a contact page, and then I'll also give you guys my email address.
And we'll put it in the show notes too.
Yeah, we'll have it in the show notes.
We'll have
a
link.
So you can just click right on it.
Honestly, let's just have you guys email me at my personal email address. It's just my name, Garrison. At garrisonsnell.com. It's easy. And then my company, Gyrosity Projects, the website is gyrosityprojects.co. It's gyrosity projects.co. I'm a marketing guy, and I created a company with a name no one can spell. It's very searchable, though.
And I'm the same. I'm a writer, okay, and I came up with Calliope. How many times have I been introduced as the Calliope writing coach? I get it.
I love it.
I totally feel
you. I tell you, man, hard to spell words or say they're great for searchability, because once you get a little bit of social proof, people start Googling, and you're the only thing.
Okay, see, space. Michael, so, see? I'm exonerated now.
It works great. Like, gyrosity is a nonsense word, but... Yeah, in the show notes, you can...
Yeah, we'll definitely
link to that. Cool. And then when you send Garrison an email, let him know, you know, hey.
Yeah, let him know you heard from, you know, heard him on our podcast. And if I may, spending 5 minutes with Garrison is incredible.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had lunch in Florida, and, you know, that was a little more than 5 minutes, but...
Yeah,
no, we're clear. We're working with Gyrosity,
absolutely.
By the way.
Absolutely. And,
and we're sending all of our authors to him, too. So
your generosity. I would say that Gyrosity is actually a form of generosity.
Oh, thanks, dude. And, I like that a lot. That's cool.
That is exactly what you have provided for us today. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
You're very welcome.
And, man, what an honor.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys inviting me on. Your studio is beautiful. Like,
why, thank you. Yeah. I did it myself.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to subscribe so that you get each new episode as it comes out. You can find all of our episodes and show notes at calliopepodcast.com. Don't forget to shoot some stars our way if you like the show.